empowered from family life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Alleged leaker in court today. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. The 21-year-old Massachusetts Air National Guardsman, accused of leaking military secrets online, faces a judge in Worcester. That judge must decide whether Jack Teixeira should remain behind bars while he awaits trial.
Prosecutors are going to argue today that setting him free would pose a risk to U.S. national security because they say foreign adversaries would be salivating at the prospect of helping him escape. They also say he can't be trusted because he has a history of hiding what they call his unsavory character, including racist and extremist views.
Correspondent Ken Delanian, the 30-year-old man who died on a New York City subway this month after being held in a headlock by a former Marine, is being laid to rest today. Jordan Neely, a homeless man with a violent past, is being eulogized by civil rights activist Al Sharpton in Harlem. His death has triggered a national conversation about private citizens acting as good Samaritans in public. The Marine who had him in a chokehold, Daniel Penny, is facing manslaughter charges. Madeline Brame is with the Victims' Rights Council.
It's unfortunate what happened on that train that day. The city of New York, the entire apparatus, has completely failed Mr. Penny and Mr. Neely. Mr. Neely had no business even being on that train, period. Mr. Penny shouldn't have never even been put in that position where he had to defend himself and other people.
Penny's attorneys say he did not intend to kill Neely and that he was acting to protect himself and other subway riders. The White House reports steady progress on a deal to increase the debt limit. Wisconsin Congressman Brian Steele.
At the end of the day, we need to come with an agreement that we're going to limit the growth of government, we're going to save taxpayers' money, and we're going to grow the economy.
Republicans demanding spending cuts as part of any deal to raise the debt ceiling. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says a vote could happen as soon as next week. The deadline is June 1st. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has made it to the cover of Time magazine. This week's edition has him standing in front of the American and Florida flags, peeling an orange. DeSantis discusses in the article his Florida blueprint for America. He'll announce next week he's running for president. Texas Senator John Cornyn says he's rooting for DeSantis over Donald Trump.
President Trump's time has passed him by, and I think what's the most important thing to me is that we have a candidate who can actually win.
Polls have consistently shown DeSantis running second to Trump among GOP voters. DeSantis' feud with Disney was ratcheted up another notch yesterday when that theme park scrapped plans to build a $1 billion facility near Orlando that would have created 2,000 jobs. President Biden is overseas in Hiroshima, Japan at the G7 summit, where one half of the world's wealth is gathered. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky will make a surprise appearance there on Sunday.
Zelensky is certain to make the case that his nation's survival is dependent on the continued flow of money and weapons from the U.S. and its allies.
Correspondent Peter Alexander at the G7, where world leaders today imposed new sanctions on Russia. Security breach at the Vatican. A man in a car confronted security today.
They were initially approached by a vehicle in a civil manner who tried to get through the gate. He was turned away, but then moments later, he came storming through full speed ahead. In fact, a gendarme, that's Vatican security, fired on his vehicle, trying to shoot out the tires, instead only hit a front fender. So the vehicle was able to make it all the way to an internal courtyard where he was apprehended, according to the Vatican, who says this individual apparently suffers from psychological problems.
Chris Livesay reporting horrific car crash on an interstate in the state of Oregon. It involved two semi-trucks and a van sandwiched between them. Seven were killed. A five-alarm fire raced through a construction site in Charlotte, North Carolina.
It was a very fast-moving moving fire, high heat conditions, well over 2,000 degrees.
100 firefighters were able to rescue 15 people at an apartment complex, including one man who was trapped on a crane for more than an hour, hundreds of feet above that raging inferno. There's a bipartisan push to require all vehicles sold in this country come with AM radio.
New Jersey Congressman Josh Gottheimer is leading the effort, saying 47 million people listen to AM radio every week.
So over the last 5 years, AM radio is actually up.
As auto manufacturers like Tesla remove AM radio from their vehicles, the bill would ensure every car comes with AM radio at no additional cost to the consumer.
They cannot tune us out.
We need to safeguard this essential tool.
Bill sponsors say AM radio is the backbone of America's national public warning system.
Natalie Migliori reporting. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley has written a new book on the virtues of masculinity.
What the left has said to men for really generations now, 20, 30 years, is that to be a man is to be toxic. And I think we've got to send just the opposite message.
The father of two says it's important we remember masculinity is not a dirty word.
We need men to be strong. We need men to take on responsibility. We need them to be protectors and providers. A man who does that can transform his life, he can transform his family, and he can transform this country.
Hawley says with confusion about gender running rampant in this country, masculinity is a virtue needed now more than ever. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Friday, clean slate legislation, rethinking Pennsylvania primaries, and grape growers feeling the pain from this week's freeze.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams calling for a 50-50 weekend. Wet on Saturday, but dry and sunnier on Sunday. Forecast details are up in 10.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Let's check the stories making news where you live next. All across New York and Pennsylvania, yesterday morning's frosty temperatures did major damage to local crops, in particular, vineyards throughout the Twin Tiers. Many grape growers are worried about the long-term consequence of that cold.
This is by far my 40 years of doing this is far and away the worst that we've ever had.
David Stamp owns Lakewood Vineyards on the west side of Seneca Lake. He says the freezing temperatures could reduce his crop by as much as 80% this year. Bursting at the seams. That's what New York Governor Kathy Hochul says her state is doing right now due to the influx of illegal immigrants arriving daily from the southern border.
You're going to start seeing people living in tents, not just on the border, but in the streets of New York and across New York State, because we've reached a breaking point.
The governor says the migrant crisis is coming to a town near you. She's looking at SUNY schools, psychiatric centers, closed churches, and military bases to house the asylum seekers. In the meantime, a growing number of local counties have declared states of emergency to keep the asylum seekers out. Pennsylvania State Senator Ryan Aument wants to change how primary elections are done. He thinks if the winning candidate fails to get 50% of the vote, then there ought to be a runoff.
To emerge as a party nominee with 25, 30, 35% of the vote, I don't think is healthy. It's not presenting the voters with the best options.
Aument feels the current election system favors extreme candidates who can win primaries but do not necessarily reflect the will of the people.
The voters ought to be able to have the tools to ensure that the nominees who do emerge are a clear consensus pick.
Critics contend runoff elections are expensive, but Aument thinks it's worth it if it ensures the winning candidates are consensus candidates. A pandemic-era provision on mail-in voting expires soon in New York. Some good government groups want to see it extended permanently. This would apply to no-excuse absentee ballots.
This isn't about some special favor. This is a reasonable definition in our, unfortunately, highly contagious world.
Susan Lerner with Common Cause says the reasons that voters cite for not wanting to cast ballots in person go beyond COVID.
That would be relevant, for instance, if you're a cancer patient under chemotherapy. Be relevant if you are immune compromised. It'd be relevant if you're an elderly person who's at high risk for COVID or somebody who's never been vaccinated for measles.
But Republican State Senator Mark Walchek is opposed opposed to open-ended absentee ballots.
We should be doing things that instill faith in our electoral process and encourage people to get out on Election Day.
During COVID, more people voted by mail, and Walchick thinks that's a big advantage for Democrats.
It seems like the push, at least in our one-party control in Albany right now, is to move more things towards absentee.
A couple years ago, voters turned down a state constitutional amendment that would have allowed no excuse absentee balloting. Primary day, by the way, in New York is June 27th. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro hosted a roundtable discussion yesterday on the mental health of children. He was joined by governors of several other states trying to develop bipartisan plans to address the growing challenges facing today's youth. New York state lawmakers are scheduled to adjourn for the rest of the year on June 8th. Before they leave Albany, though, they could take up so-called clean slate legislation, which would erase the criminal records of prospective employees. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
You know, you can't have endless payment, repayment of your debt to society. At some point, you should be allowed to be accepted as someone who is willing to move forward and contribute, and that's what we want.
But Donna Nolan says some crimes deserve to be preserved. Her son was murdered in a drive-by shooting in 2015.
I don't want anyone to ever forget who they were and what they did to my child, to my family. They took my son away from me. They took my son away from my husband. They took a brother away from three other brothers.
Four people were implicated in that murder. One has completely served his jail time. Nolan says employers deserve to know the names of those who killed her son.
They can't just make it about low-level crimes and misdemeanors. I get that. Some people make a mistake. They go to jail. They do their time. They didn't harm anyone. And they learn, not when it comes to taking someone's life.
Advocates for clean slate legislation argue existing criminal records make it next to impossible for those who were previously incarcerated to find a job. Lawyers for the man convicted of manslaughter in one of the worst road wrecks ever plan to appeal Wednesday's guilty verdict in upstate New York. Namin Hussein facing 15 years in prison for the October 2018 limo crash that killed 20 people in Schoharie County. Victims' families say Mavis Tyer deserves punishment, too, for falsifying records to show that limo safe to drive, when in reality it was not.
Why haven't they been indicted? That's my question. Where's Mavis in all of this?
They definitely hold accountability. There's a part of this that's theirs also.
Faulty brakes are what caused that limo to careen down a hillside at more than 100 miles per hour, killing 18 people in the vehicle, along with two pedestrians. Namin Hussein owned that limo. His sentencing day is May 31st. Home prices in Pennsylvania are through the roof, as they say. Since the start of the year, they're up 7.5%. The average price for an existing home right now in the Commonwealth is north of $210,000. Second round action of the PGA is underway at Oak Hill in Pittsford, New York, just outside of Rochester. Scotty Scheffler near the leaderboard at the start of play today.
Very difficult golf course. As I was looking at it throughout the week, I'm like, man, I don't know how shooting under par is even possible out here in some of the golf holes.
It is the first time in more than a decade that Oak Hill has hosted the PGA Championship, one of golf's four majors. We've got more sports next right here on the Family Life Noon Report. Let's begin with the NBA playoffs. The Denver Nuggets halfway to the finals. They beat the Lakers again last night to take a 2-0 series lead in that best-of-seven Western Conference finale. Nuggets head coach Michael Malone.
We're not celebrating. We haven't done anything. We're not satisfied. Our mindset is we're going to win game three. We got to stay together. We can't beat ourselves, and our defense has to travel.
The series shifts to L.A. on Saturday. Tonight, the Eastern Conference finale resumes with the Miami Heat taking on Boston. The upset-minded Heat have a one-game-to-none lead in that one. Stanley Cup playoffs, the Florida Panthers take the early lead in the Eastern Conference Finals. Matthew Tkachuk scored with just 12 seconds left in the fourth overtime to lift the Panthers to a 3-2 victory over Carolina. Hurricanes head coach Rod Brind'Amour.
Tough way to lose a game, that's for sure. Didn't go that long. A lot of ups and downs in that game. So, one game. You know, at the end of the day, it's one game.
Out west, the Golden Knights host the Dallas Stars game one of their best-of-seven series in Vegas tonight. Baseball action, the Yankees double up the Blue Jays. They take the series in Toronto. Nestor Cortez gets the win on the mound. Aaron Judge slugged home run number 12 on the season. 4-2 your final, New York. The Mets beat Tampa. Interleague play 3-2 last night. Pete Alonso hit his league-best 16th dinger to spark the offense. Tyler McGill looked good on the mound, surrendering just 4 hits over 6 innings.
Yeah, I mean, just shows the show. We can compete with anybody when we're playing well. And, as myself, you know, it doesn't matter who's on the other side. You know, just go out there and compete and, you know, battle.
The Mets open a weekend series against the Guardians tonight at Citi Field. The Cardinals beat the Dodgers 16-8 last night. That one was close till the 8th when St. Louis slugged 7 runs in 1 inning. The second leg of horse racing's Triple Crown is this weekend. The 148th Preakness Stakes happens tomorrow in Baltimore. Mage is seeking another win after capturing the Kentucky Derby earlier this month. The last horse to win the Triple Crown was Justified 5 years ago. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. And still to come on the Noon Report for a Friday, Christian Nationalism, the Capital Connection crew, and Kev calling for a 50-50 weekend. Nice Sunday, not so nice Saturday. That forecast after this.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. The Christian nationalism is at the center of one of our most heated cultural debates right now. Defining it has proven to be elusive at best. Talk about Christian nationalism not only dominates Christian Twitter, but many secular outfits have spilled all kinds of ink attempting to explain what it means and why it's so dangerous. Perhaps the only thing that the warring factions on either side of the question agree on is that what is at stake is zero sum. Either we're on their side or we're against Christ. Now, advocates of Christian nationalism do often accurately describe the problems that Western societies face and the beauties of their tradition and transcendence and the vital importance of allowing faith to influence public life. They're also right about the short-sightedness of Christians who are allergic to any cultural application of Christianity. We are not, Scripture says, to be of the world, but we are certainly to be in it. Partly right is still, however, partly wrong. And the very best aspects of Christian nationalism are, in fact, the common inheritance of Christian theology and conservative ideals that go way back from people like Edmund Burke, Abraham Kuyper, Winston Churchill, William Wilberforce. It's the innovations of Christian nationalism that should give us pause. Look, it's true that anyone from the right who ever speaks of applying their faith to citizenship or the political process or of taking seriously their political duties will be accused of dangerously mixing church and state or imposing their religious beliefs on everyone else. Not so much when anyone from the left side of the political or religious spectrum does the same thing. Still, the word nationalism cannot be disconnected from its early 20th century history, Spain, Italy, most notably Germany, nor from the revolutionary nationalisms that spread across the Third World in the latter part of the 20th century. In all of these cases, promises of liberation only brought brutal tyranny. Now, this is more than just a critique of a lousy name, although intentionally linking Christianity with nationalism is kind of like letting a corporate rival choose your company logo. If we have to constantly clarify what we don't mean, isn't it better then to rely on the whole host of other words that emerge from the very long history of Christian interaction with state and society? Concepts like sphere sovereignty, the common good, subsidiarity, intermediate institutions, cultural renewal, these have a rich and helpful history of directing Christian citizenship. Now, most problematic are when advocates of Christian nationalism really do resemble the worst historical examples, like, for example, claiming that the contingent good of being from a particular place or people is an absolute inviolable good, or by calling for separate states for different ethnicities, for racial segregation, even for ethno-nationalism and anti-Semitism. And these are more than just problems with a name, though at its best, Christian nationalism remains an inconsistent system. Some versions may be little more than just a broad Judeo-Christian view of the world, but others seek a specifically Roman Catholic state, others a general Protestant state, others a specifically Reformed state. In our social media saturated world, we tend to define ourselves more by the team that we're on than by what's good and beautiful, true and wise. However, we need not accept this simple choice between Christian nationalism or going woke, between drag shows for kids or a Christian prince. course, anyone who embraces a Christian vision of any kind for our homes, our neighborhoods, communities, or nation will be called Christian nationalism. We need not mind that. Rather, we should instead commit ourselves to be faithful in the times, the places, among the people to which God has called us and placed us. The Christian vision of life in the world is more than robust enough on its own, without the dead weight of nationalism in tow. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
The weekend is here. Kevin Williams is near. That forecast next.
The call for this afternoon, warm, but sunshine fading. High temperatures, low to mid-70s for most. For tonight, a couple of showers and rumbles reaching parts of western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Dry elsewhere, but clouds gather. Low temps, 50s. For tomorrow, cloudy, widespread showers and some rumbles. High temps, 60s and low 70s. On Sunday, ultimately, a good helping of sunshine and high temperatures in the upper 60s to the middle 70s.
All right, thank you, Kevin. It's Friday, folks, the 19th of May, and this is the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Gear at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Well, thank you both for joining us today. Jason, I got to start with you in this migrant crisis in New York. We have seen how it's affecting schools in New York City, schools that are now homeless shelters, but this is now starting to spread to other parts of the state. The busing of migrants is a huge controversy right now. We've seen counties declare states of emergency over this. Is it the job of the federal government to provide homes for these migrants? And what do you think of Governor Hochul's response thus far?
Yeah, as far as New York City goes, I mean, I guess, you know, being a sanctuary city sounds great until it comes to your city, and then it's a problem. The federal government has a role here. It has to deal with the immigration problem that we have. It can't just keep forcing this problem down to localities. It needs to step in. As far as what the governor is doing, I'm afraid it's going to be too little too late. She's essentially crying out for help from the federal government, but thus far, all of the policies implemented by the Democratic administration here in New York and by the Biden administration in Washington, D.C., has led to the problem that we have.
Michael, primary day was Tuesday, the dust starting to settle from that vote. Traditionally, the turnout is not very high, but what was the big headline from Tuesday's elections?
Well, you're right. Number one, it was not a very high turnout at all. I'm going to look at the two biggest cities of Pennsylvania. In western Pennsylvania, Allegheny County, the district attorney that was elected there for Pittsburgh is a progressive. So that city, it looks like it's heading in the direction of places like Chicago and others with these leftist district attorneys. In Philadelphia, a little bit in a different direction, there was a progressive seeming to lead in the polls in the mayoral election in Philadelphia. But interestingly, voters in Philadelphia, Democrat voters, instead voted for a more relatively conservative comparatively to that radical. So Philadelphia might be turning in a slightly different direction than what the polls were showing.
Yeah, and that woman who won in Philadelphia hoping to be the first black woman elected mayor of Philly, so some history there. Of course, Tuesday was also school budget day in New York State. While most of the budgets passed, that's not really the story. What I think the big story is on school budget day, Jason, and I'd love to get your thoughts in this, are the board candidates, because you want to make an impact on your community. It starts with those school boards. Your thoughts overall on school budget day in New York?
Well, I think the takeaway that we have to look at is an honest reflection on why the candidates that support conservative principles keep losing in these elections. These are seats that I don't want to say easily attainable, but they can be won. There's a small number of voters. Churches can actually be the deciding factor in many of these districts.
Yeah.
The bottom line is we have to get candidates that can message well, learn to campaign, and sophisticate their campaigns so we can win these races. Change really begins at the local level, and it has to begin at school board elections.
Let me ask you this follow-up. School boards have become something, and I don't know if this is kind of a consequence of what we've seen in Virginia and Florida and elsewhere, but school boards have become battlegrounds for the culture wars. Is this the proper role of these elected positions?
Well, education should be local, and I'm thankful for school boards that are able to stand in the gap. The problem, though, is when candidates run as single-issue candidates, they're getting defeated by teacher union candidates, and we've got to find a way to better equip conservative candidates to win these races and change things in our state.
While we're talking education, Michael, where do things stand? I know there's about a month to go, just a little over a month to go, before the budget deadline in Harrisburg. Where do things stand on school choice legislation?
Well, again, the governor has said positive things towards school choice, but whether or not that translates into his support for legislative initiatives on school choice remains to be seen.
All right, back to Albany we go. Jason, it's almost closing time there on the 2023 legislative session. What do you think will be the legislative items that could be acted on before they are scheduled to adjourn June the 8th?
Well, I think we're watching for a late push for assisted suicide, at least at the committee level, so we're going to be working to block that. I think you're going to see things like clean slate that would actually wipe the criminal records and background checks for people that are looking for work. There may be some housing things that are done probably through executive order. So we've got a number of issues that are moving. None of them seem to be very earth-shattering, though. I think that much of what was moved here in New York was done in the budget. We may come to a whimpering close.
Yeah. House Bill 300 caused a lot of uproar, Michael, when that passed narrowly in the PA House. Just to update our audience, where is that legislation, very dangerous legislation, going now? Or is it not going anywhere?
Well, it is in the Pennsylvania Senate. It's now sitting in the Pennsylvania State Government Committee. The chairman of that committee is Senator Chris Dush, an ally of ours at Pennsylvania Family Institute, but also just a very strong, well-motivated state senator who understands the implications of this legislation. So they are certainly going to take a look at it, but based on what we understand of what's happening in the Senate, there is no appetite for that to move forward.
There was a new Siena College poll that came out this week, Jason. I know people sometimes don't like to put a lot of stock in polls, but this one was kind of interesting because it shows that although Governor Hochul's policies remain popular, she is underwater for the first time since becoming governor. Just 40% of New Yorkers give her a favorable job review. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think she's been taking a beating through the budget process. It was late. She did not accomplish much of what she wanted to do. I think tried to moderate since the election, but you know, she's facing a progressive Democrat-controlled legislature that isn't looking to moderate. So where she has been extreme has been issues like abortion. And so on social issues, she's been way out there, and she has not been able to accomplish that suburban agenda that she was hoping to get done. And she did not get the budget bump either, and that's what's significant in this poll, is usually a governor benefits from the ability of passing something, getting a few poll points and a bump. She did not get that this time, and that's going to be problematic for her.
Yeah, and the transgender policy was a big factor in the school budget vote back on Tuesday in New York. But, Michael, there are districts throughout Pennsylvania, another one this week, Bucks County passing an ordinance. This was in the town of Perkasie, outside of Philadelphia, banning transgender students from using the restrooms, the shower facilities of the opposite sex. Are districts throughout the Commonwealth starting to realize some of the privacy concerns that you've been raising for years in Pennsylvania?
Well, certainly they are, and many parents are hearing about it because their daughters are coming home and saying that a boy came in their bathroom or their locker room in their local school district, and parents are up in arms. And so in these last couple of election cycles, especially since COVID, many conservative school boards have been elected, or at least sensible school boards is a better way to put it, in school districts across Pennsylvania, and are taking action like this school district there in the Penn Ridge School District. We support that, and our attorneys at our Independence Law Center have been helping school districts craft legislation that will pass constitutional muster.
Hey, well, the wait is almost over, Jason. I know you can't wait. It's been 3 years since you've had a live legislative day, but that wait is almost over. Tuesday is the day it happens, Legislative Day 2023 in Albany. What are some of the issues you hope to raise, and can people still register for that event?
Yeah, the latter matter first. They can absolutely still register through our website, albanyupdate.com. We'll even take walk-in registrants. But we are excited to have people back in the building. You know, so often people feel alone in New York when it comes to the social values and things we care about. And coming together at Legislative Day reminds you that you're not alone. There are people who think like you. And legislatively, I mentioned assisted suicide. We'll be dealing with that issue. We are going to continue to fight against a funding out-of-state abortions. We'll also be updating negotiating some things regarding parental rights issues. Legislation's moving in Albany that directly impacts your decision-making capacity regarding your children. Those are things we'll be covering at this year's Legislative Day.
Got a great lineup of speakers, too. Coach Joe Kennedy, a lot of our listeners know who he is. He'll be there, so we'll give that website at the end. But, Michael, before we get to that, Life After Roe, Creating a Culture of Life in Pennsylvania. That event happens Saturday, June 3rd. How are we doing at creating a culture of life in the Commonwealth?
Well, it's a challenge right now because of the effects, the impact of the overturn of Roe versus Wade. The Democrat Party sees that as something to spend a lot of money to create lies about the pro-life movement and about abortion. We're fighting back. That's why we're doing this event. That's actually in Perkasie in Bucks County, Saturday, June 3rd. But it is going to be a long road ahead for us in the pro-life movement to continue to convince our fellow citizens about the humanity of the unborn child and why they need our protection.
All right. That will have to be the last word this week. Those are fast 10 minutes. We've been in a lot of places. But Jason, you mentioned Legislative Day. It's coming up Tuesday, May 23rd. Where can folks go to get registered?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
And learn more about this Life After Roe event that's happening next month in Pennsylvania. Michael, where can folks go to find you?
PAFamily.org.
All right, thank you, guys. Capital Connection airs Fridays during the Noon Report or online anytime. FamilyLife.org. Just look for the news icon on our podcast page.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A cold front will be crossing the area this weekend. Ahead of it, we've got a warm day underway today. And as the front nears, we've got some rain and rumbles of thunder due later tonight and tomorrow. Behind the front, the sky is clear to salvage Sunday. It's certainly the pick day of this weekend for any outdoor plans you might have. The call for this afternoon, warm, but sunshine fading. High temperatures, low to mid-70s for most. For tonight, a couple of showers and rumbles reaching parts of western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. Dry elsewhere, but clouds gather. Low temps, 50s. For tomorrow, cloudy, widespread showers and some rumbles. High temps, 60s and low 70s. On Sunday, ultimately, a good helping of sunshine and high temperatures in the upper 60s to the middle 70s.
All right, have a great weekend, Kevin. Thank you. Finally at noon, ladybug lore. There is an abundance of ladybugs out there this year, and with that in mind, reporter Bree Tennis takes a closer look at this amazing insect.
Ladybugs have been linked to good fortune for centuries. It's said if one lands on you, you'll have years of luck based on how many dots are on the ladybug. And if you squish one, that luck will be bad. Ladybugs live for about a year, and they don't bite unless you're an aphid. They like those. National Geographic says there are 5,000 different species of ladybugs in the world, but in North America, we mostly see the seven-spotted ladybug, and in mythology, they grant wishes. I'm Bree Tennis, NBC News Radio.
All right, Bree, thank you for that, and I guess I'll wish every one of you listening right now a wonderful weekend. Be safe out there. That's our world for Friday, the 19th of May. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.